Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Tipsy Ghost. We're your tipsy hosts, Sarah, Sarah, and Lindsay.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
Hi.
So something kind of embarrassing, but really not really, happened to me.
Uh-oh.
We were deciding what topic to do this week. We decided, and I was kind of divvying up information to send out, and I was very detailed about it.
Yes. And it was the most detailed divvy up I've ever seen.
Like, I sent hyperlinks to websites. Like, it was...
Yes, it was very good.
It took me a while.
Who says hyperlinks?
What would you call them?
Links to websites?
Oh, I would have said hyperlinks to... I'm old. You're old. Yay.
We're both older than Lindsay.
So. Okay.
You're older than me by 6 months. Stop it.
I mean, you're older. You need to respect me.
Never.
I'm the eldest.
And so apparently I inserted the wrong hyperlink to our episode. And the one that I inserted.
Oh, yes. I noticed that. I just didn't say anything.
You should have said something. We were working together and I was like, so... Did you mean to send this?
I was very confused. Well, I didn't look at it until it had been a while since you'd sent it. So I said, thought maybe like the website just like it redirected. I thought it was my fault.
Sure didn't. So we'll get to what we're talking about. But the hyperlink I inserted was not what we're talking about. And that says Nikola Tesla's weird obsession with pigeons.
I was very confused. But maybe they just got rid of this news article and decided to post something about pigeons instead.
I know. I read through the whole article and I was like,
no,
what?
No, absolutely not.
Well, I kept thinking maybe there's a tie that she's trying to get. There's a reason.
There's a reason she put this in. What's the clue?
And then I scrolled down. It's not there. But it was a very interesting article.
It was. So once Sarah pointed it out and I was like, okay, well, I mean, I'll just read it just to see what I sent people. By mistake. And it turns out Nikola Tesla was never married, but admitted to falling in love with a very special white pigeon. And that's the pigeon visited him regularly.
I have to go back and read it.
He visited him.
He reportedly said, I love that pigeon as a man loves a woman. No, and she loved me.
Ew.
As long as I had her, there was purpose in my life.
No, ew. Nikola Tesla, are you admitting to bestiality? That is not how a man loves a woman.
Ooh, I don't know.
I don't know, but...
And a man loves a pigeon.
Yeah, in 1922, he reported that the...
She's just like, yeah.
The white... I know, I just ignore you guys now. I'm used to it. He said that the white pigeon had flown into his room to tell him that she was dying.
Oh.
But before the bird passed, he said a white light shone from her eyes.
Absolutely not, Nicholas.
Brighter than anything that he had ever generated with his electrical machinery.
Absolutely not, Nicholas. Generated?
He was heartbroken after her death.
Of course he was.
And felt that his life's work was now finished.
Oh, my God.
So it turns out that's what I sent you guys.
Well, I was thinking there was a tie because what are we really talking about?
She does like bird photography.
That sounded insulting.
Do you love pigeons like Nikola Tesla does?
She also knows these like weird stories about people falling in love with like inanimate objects.
That's very true.
I don't know. The cartoon anime girl.
The anime thing.
You thought that I was just testing you. Like, are you actually looking at my links?
I mean, I did look at it, and I thought that...
She said either Lindsay hasn't done her article or done her section yet, or she just didn't look at the links.
And I looked at it, and I thought... I thought that the news or whatever, the website had deleted that link and then just, like, it redirected.
I get that. That's why I was like, so did you mean to send this?
I put the right link in, and it turns out that that link goes to the appropriate one, and right underneath that story is the one about Tesla's pigeon.
Yes.
So
you just didn't scroll up high enough.
I don't know what happened. I did not mean for you to read about Tesla's love with pigeons.
Well, I'm sorry. I did not look at the correct link then because I had seen, so after I already wrote my story. Yeah. I just ignored that link. Or, I'm sorry, that hyperlink.
Thank you.
Thank you. It was a hyperlink.
Okay.
Anyways, what are we really talking about? And how did I think that maybe this was tied into Nikola Tesla?
Pigeon love.
We're not talking about pigeons. We are talking about the story of Radium Girls.
Yes.
Which is honestly one of my absolute favorite topics because I love a good scandal.
Mm-hmm.
It's slightly medical, and mm-hmm. I do love that. And then I like a good, like... I don't know. The underdog wins type of story.
Conspiracy, too. It's got some conspiracy in it.
Conspiracy, history.
Some cover-ups.
History.
It's all the things.
Why did you think this tied into Nikola Tesla and his pigeons?
Maybe he had radium poisoning.
That's like, why he loved the pigeon.
Yeah. I was like, maybe he suffered from radium poisoning. And I just, and maybe she's trying to give an example.
Hallucinating the pigeon.
Their love, the white lights shining from her eyes.
More than any of his electric machinery.
We are going to first talk about radium. It was discovered in 1898 by the famous Marie and Pierre Curie.
Marie Curie.
And her husband, Pierre.
No, it doesn't ring.
I know. I'm sorry. But they both get credit for it.
Yeah. But we'll give her the credit.
By the Curies.
Okay.
In 1898. So it glowed in the dark and was noted by Marie Curie as, quote, "these gleamings seemed suspended in the darkness and stirred us with ever new emotion and enchantment."
Ooh, it stirred up a little something.
And I just love that because, like, she's the science boss, but also, like, that's so...
She's passionate.
And passionate. Enchantment.
About radium.
Romanticized radium.
Yes, she really did. She gave them emotion. She really liked it. Main takeaway here is it glows in the dark.
Got it.
So it was soon popular, and it was used to treat several ailments back then, mainly cancer.
Okay.
It was considered a miracle substance, and was also believed that it could prevent aging. So they sold it as toothpaste. They sold it in cosmetics. Women used it on their faces because they were trying to battle aging. So radium would fizz, and it would give off like a blue-green light, which is what made it glow in the dark. It was also used to treat colds. So pretty much everything.
It's a miracle drug.
When in doubt, radium it out.
Yeah. They sold it as water, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They would put it in their water.
Radium water.
Just everything.
Face creams so your skin would glow.
It's got a broken finger? Put some radium on it.
So radium pretty much takes the world by storm is what I'm getting at.
Yes.
Everybody loves it. William J. Hammer, he was an inventor from the U.S., so he goes to...
Mr. Hammer?
Head?
Hammer pants.
No, Hammer pants.
Okay.
That's what she was thinking of.
MC?
I was thinking of sharks, but yeah.
Hammer, I knew where you were going, but she said hammerhead, and I was like, what?
Sharks, obviously.
All those things. Hammerhead pants.
He kind of was like a shark, because he was a businessman and an inventor. There you go. Okay.
Nailed it.
And he also had pants, so.
He probably was wearing pants, yes. I didn't put that in MC my notes, but I'm sure pants. He did. Hammer goes to Paris. And while he's there, he receives a sample of radium salt from the Curies themselves and discovered that when he mixed radium with glue and zinc sulfide, he could make a glow-in-the-dark paint.
Ooh.
Mm. Took this back to the U.S. of A, and that's where things get started. Uh-oh. So the U.S. Radium Corporation, they extracted and purified this radium from 1917 to 1926. So they marketed these radium paints under the brand name Undark.
Wow, that's clever.
Because it's light. Light is undark.
What's the opposite of light?
Dark is unlight.
It's undark. We'll call it that.
We'll make up our own word for light, which is undark.
Which is so clever. That's how they talked.
They weren't clever back then, but you know what? For trying. So they would use the ore for radium, and it was mined from Colorado and Utah. As a defense contractor, U.S. Radium was a major supplier of radioluminescent watches to the military. So they set up factories in three places, and we're going to kind of go over these a little bit more in detail later. Orange, New Jersey, the factory was founded in 1917, Ottawa, Illinois in the 1920s, and Waterbury, Connecticut, also in the 1920s. So Orange, New Jersey, this was the first factory set up, and it had over 300 workers, which were mainly women. An estimated 4,000 workers total were hired by the corporations in the U.S. and Canada to paint these watch faces. So they're painting the watch faces with the radium because, again, it glows in the dark. So they're contracting it out to the armies because glow-in-the-dark watches.
Yeah, because they're on the battlefields.
They're on the battlefields. They're in the dark.
They're timepieces.
Yep.
They also did dials, like for aircraft.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very cool.
So women... And I'm saying women, mainly women were hired there. I'm sure there were men, but I'm going to say women.
It's because their hands were smaller and they could paint.
They're delicate.
Yes, that's exactly why.
They would paint about 250 dials a day, and you'd earn a penny and a half per dial.
Wow.
I did the conversions for you.
Oh, thank you.
It's about 31 cents a dial.
Okay.
So that is about $77 a day in our day and age.
Okay. Mm.
In their day and age, it was $3.75 a day.
I don't feel like that's minimum wage.
$77 a day.
But they thought it was good pay.
At that time, excellent pay.
Yeah. Right.
It was, I think, 3 times what you could make in any other factory.
Right.
But it's all kind of like commission. Like, you're paid based off how many you can do.
Exactly.
So if you could do 250 a day, you would get that much money.
True. But so if you did less. Doing that. Yeah.
Right. So, of course, the U.S. Radium Corporation, which I'm just going to say the USRC.
Thank you.
There's no good way to say that acronym. I tried.
Yeah.
USRC. There's can't.
A-Zerk.
We spent a lot of time together.
They had 70 women on staff to perform various tasks handling the radium. So they're not painting the dials, but they're helping to handle the radium. While the owners and scientists, like the head honchos, they're avoiding any exposure themselves. So they were the ones who were actually aware of the effects of radium, but they weren't sharing this. So they'd be walking around wearing lead screens, masks, and using tongs. Whereas the women had nothing to protect themselves.
Ah, red flags.
Why are you wearing like a mask and tongs?
Keep going.
I'm just going to dig my arm in the radium.
Keep going. It's totally fine.
It's fine. So the USRC, they even distributed literature to the medical community about, quote, the injurious effects, end quote, of radium. But in spite of all this knowledge, they continued to have deaths that occurred, which we'll get into later. So finally, there was lots of similar circumstances surrounding the sicknesses and ailments that were happening to the factory workers. And Dr. Harrison Martlin, he was the county physician of Newark, he started investigating these. So there was no safety precautions, obviously, because, you know, this is the 1917s. They were even encouraged to
lick the plural 17s.
The 17s. The 1910s? Okay. 1910s and 20s. The women were encouraged to lick their brushes to keep the tip pointed and prevent the paint from drying out because the brushes lose their shape after a few strokes. And the supervisors encouraged them to lip dip paint.
Mm-hmm.
Love that.
Lip dip paint.
The women would be glowing by the end of the day and not from having fun. Oh, you're glowing. Oh, thank you. I just had a great day at work.
But literally, you're glowing. It's dark out. What's wrong with you?
And it would be like their clothes would be glowing.
Their teeth are like...
Their teeth are luminescent.
Yeah.
Which, because the women did not know the effects of the radium, because it was kept from them, they would paint their nails, their teeth, and their faces for fun.
It probably looked really fun. I mean, if they're being told it's safe, they're probably like, hey, this looks really cool.
Well, and as you remember, like, it was first targeted in cosmetics and all that stuff. I'm imagining that was probably expensive in the cosmetics. So they were like, hey, we get this free radium for free.
Absolutely.
Let's just paint it on my face and I'm glowing.
I think that they were told that from their bosses too. Like, you should take advantage of this because you're working here. You probably wouldn't get to it normally.
And these women probably couldn't afford those cosmetics.
Yeah, exactly.
So Harvard physiologist Cecil Drinker, he investigates the factories and said, quote, dust samples collected in the workroom from various locations and from chairs not used by the workers were all luminous in the dark room. Their hair, faces, hands, arms, necks, the dresses, the underclothes, even the corsets of the dial painters were luminous. One of the girls showed luminous spots on her legs and thighs, which Cecil, why are you looking at her thighs?
She's got a high skirt. I don't know.
The back of another was luminous, almost to the waist.
Okay.
So, of course, throughout all of this, the company is saying, oh, it's totally fine. Everything's safe. Everything's fine. So I'm going to talk about a couple of the other factories. Like I said, there was three. That was the one that was in Orange, New Jersey.
Yes.
So let's go to Ottawa, Illinois.
Okay.
So Ottawa, Illinois, this is Radium Dial Company, and they're in charge of the factory in Ottawa. And it was established in actually like their former high school in town in 1922, and they were painting dials for clocks, and their largest client was West Clocks Corporation, which was in charge of Big Ben, probably the most famous clock in the world. Like the U.S. Radium Corps, they hired young women to paint using the same lip-dip paint approach. So Waterbury, Connecticut was the last factory, and it was funded by the Waterbury Clock Company, and they used, obviously, the same approach of lip-dip and paint. But everything's fine. Everything's fine, okay, Boydston?
Everything's fine.
So Boydston's going to go next, and she's going to tell us that everything was fine, and that's the end of our story.
Yeah, everybody's fine. Everybody's healthy.
Everybody's healthy and happy and
don't look
healthy.
Yeah. Radium is not poisonous. Look.
I do need to add, there is a very good, very well researched, so very detailed book called The Radium Girls, The Dark History of America's Shining Women by Kate Moore.
Yes.
Did you just snort?
The Shining Women.
They literally were shining.
I know. That's why I'm like laughing, because it's a play on words.
It is. It's honestly
a really good book. It's very long and detailed. But it is very good. And there's so much research. She knows literally everything about everything.
Yes. If you're a listener like I am, it's what, 17 hours?
17 hours.
Did 17 you listen hours. To it?
I listened to, I think, 9 hours of it.
Good job.
Thank you.
Good job. No, like that was a serious good job.
It is. I'm all about science and information, and I love history, all these things. So it's like right up my alley. But my goodness, it's not an easy read because it is so information packed. You can't just like doze off and like, oh, we're on something else right now. No.
You doze off while reading or listening?
Yeah, well, I do this anyways. Like I'll be watching a movie and learning German at the same time. Uh-huh. So I will often have like a book on the background and clean, or like if I'm like doing something, well, I'll miss a few words and kind of pay attention. This is not that. You must pay attention, and it's long. It's good.
So like Lindsay said, the girls were told that radium was absolutely safe, mm-hmm. and that it would make them beautiful. The problem is that some of those same companies telling the dial painters that the radium paint was safe were the ones funding the research to support their claims. So they had a few studies paid for by the companies themselves saying that radium was not harmful to the body. Mm-hmm. They conveniently ignored the independent studies that proved the opposite and continued to tell the dial painters that it was very safe to work with.
Conflict of interest. Mm-hmm.
This, of course, is completely untrue. Marie Curie, which is the only way you should ever pronounce her name.
I mean, that's the way her name deserves to be pronounced.
I mean, she's French, right? You got to say it like that.
She suffered radiation burns while handling radium and eventually died from radiation exposure, as did several other researchers handling the same thing. So once it passes the mucous membranes, like the gums, whenever you lip dip paint, it gets lodged in the body's tissues. From there, it kind of shoots off micro particles to nearby cells, causing those to mutate and eventually die. Radium also acts like calcium when it's inside the body, accumulating in the bones.
I heard somebody explain it as calcium's crazy cousin.
It is. Like on... like
Which makes sense to me.
Yeah.
On the chemical chart, it looks very similar.
It imitates it.
And so it ends up replacing the calcium, causing the bones to become very brittle and fragile.
Instead of building up the bones, they destroy the bone.
Which should be strong. Right. Instead,
brittle bones.
They're the opposite of strong.
But the bone recognizes it as the same.
They're unstrong.
Unstrong. Perfect.
Oh my God.
Undark and unstrong.
I've never heard such a word.
Not only does it cause bones to crumble, but it also causes ailments like cataracts, loose teeth, hair loss, invasive tumors, anemia, bone fractures, bone necrosis, suppression of menstruation, sterility, and prolonged exposure can cause cancers, commonly lung cancer and bone cancer, but it really any kind of cancer.
Which is interesting because when radium was discovered, they're using it to treat cancer.
So they thought.
So they thought. This miracle drug was not a miracle.
Correct.
Yeah, it's usually not. So the dial painters had to find out the hard way. Because they were paid per dial and docked pay if the dials were sloppy, and because the dials were very small, requiring a great deal of precision, they were instructed to lip paint, which Lindsay went over. They needed to make the fine point at the end, which means every single time they're making that point, they're ingesting radium.
Which I heard them calling lip point, too, several times. So I don't know if it's lip dip paint and lip pointing combined, but like lip point.
Either way, there's radium on the brush at whatever point.
It ends up in your mouth at some point.
It's going into their mouth.
Radium has wound up in your mouth.
They are ingesting radium. But not all of the girls lip painted. They didn't.
Lip painted. Yeah.
Lip pointed.
See, that's where I get confused because I heard him calling it lip pointing.
Not all the girls did that. I
mean, they didn't put it in their mouth.
Some didn't like the taste or the grittiness, and some just didn't feel comfortable because they weren't really convinced that it was safe. But this slowed down their productivity, which had a direct impact on their pay.
Right.
Those that chose to lip paint were at a very high risk for developing symptoms of radium toxicity. And I have a few stories and examples. Just, I'm going to throw out a graphic warning. Some of these descriptions are very gruesome.
Oh, gosh.
But I feel like it's necessary to tell these stories to both do their story justice and to recognize just how harmful the radium was, even though they were told it was safe.
I agree.
So keep in mind this whole time, like, these women thought that the radium was safe. Like, they were just told, it's totally fine. Just keep doing it. And it's got
healing properties even.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
First one, in January of 1922, one of the dial painters named Molly Maggia had a toothache. She worked for the Radium Luminous Materials Corporation, which was later called the United States Radium Corporation in Orange, New Jersey.
Yesrk.
Esrk.
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 Mm-hmm. So she went to the dentist. He pulled the tooth. A few weeks later, she went back to have the next tooth, the one right next to it, removed. Neither of the wounds healed, and eventually they grew together, forming an even bigger wound, which was then seeping out blood and pus into Molly's mouth.
Oh, gross. Sorry.
Owie.
Even more teeth needed to be removed after that. By May, which is only 5 months after her first toothache, her dentist thought that she needed surgery to remove a fast-growing abscess on her jaw. When he got the gums open, the bone didn't look quite right to him. It was apparently ashy and gray. So he went in to probe it with his finger, just to touch it, and the whole bone crumbled under his fingertip, quote, like ashes in a fireplace.
Ew. Like, that ew, but can you imagine the pain that she probably had when her jaw just completely fell apart?
No. When they were describing this in the book, I just was, like, cringing the whole time. Dental pain is terrible anyways. Dental pain is
terrible.
Mm-hmm. And then, oh my God, these poor women.
So instead of removing an abscess like he originally thought, he ended up digging her entire left jaw out with his fingers. So that summer, the rest of Molly's jaw came out, followed by bits of her inner ear. And by September of 1922, so only 8 months after her first toothache, Molly was dead. The tumors had cut into her jugular vein and flooded her throat with blood, choking her to death in bed. Her family obviously described her death as painful and terrible.
Oh, I'm sure.
That's probably putting it mildly. Honestly.
Very mildly.
Yeah.
That sounds traumatic for every single person involved.
Ugh.
Doctors were puzzled by her condition and determined that she had died of syphilis. And don't worry, we get into that a little bit later. So Molly was the first dial painter to die of this illness.
Syphilis slash
poisoning.
Poisoning. Yeah.
That same year, Radium Dial Company opened in Ottawa, Illinois, like Lindsay said, and hundreds of girls were hired to paint clocks and watch faces using the same lip point method as was used in New Jersey. Moving forward, honestly, I'm just going to refer to them as the company.
Yeah, you know,
either one. I don't care who they are. They're the company.
They're both bad.
Yes. So let's talk about one of the first dial painters from the Ottawa company to die of radium poisoning. Margaret Looney, also known as Peg, started working there when she was 17. 6 years later, she became sick. So she had a tooth removed and the wound never healed. She became anemic. She couldn't walk because of hip pain. So her fiance pulled her around in a wagon.
Aww.
And as with Molly Maggia, her teeth and bits of jawbone were falling out.
My God, what a horrible way to live and die.
Mm-hmm.
Just your jaw falls out. You can't, because they probably didn't do like peg tubes, feeding tubes at this time.
No.
So they just wasted away, literally.
When you're thinking this is like 1920s, yeah. Early 1920s, I mean, World War One, post-World War One.
Yeah.
There's like, the country is in shambles.
So sad.
So Peg collapsed at work one day, and the company sent her to a, quote, company hospital.
Okay.
Because of this, her family essentially had no say in where she was hospitalized, and sadly were not allowed to visit.
Oh my gosh.
All they were told is that she probably had diphtheria, and she was in quarantine. So she died at the age of 24.
Jeez, that's so young.
In the hospital. without her family by her side.
That is horrible.
That is really sad.
That alone is incredibly sad, but that's not all.
Oh, gosh.
My friends, the company wanted to bury her immediately.
Of course they did.
Her family, however, insisted that she have a Catholic funeral, but they wanted an autopsy first.
Awesome.
And wanted her family doctor to be present for it. What's awesome about an autopsy?
They wanted it because the company was trying to bury it and bury their secrets. And the family's like, no, we need an autopsy. We need to know what she died from because it's not what you're saying. The family knew what's up. That's awesome. What's awesome. I just went on a rant. The family knew that they needed an autopsy. The company was like, no, we're going to keep this buried and we're not going to tell anybody, so we're going to dispose of her body ASAP. Family said, heck no, tech no.
They did. Word for word. That's what they said. They wanted her family doctor to be present for it, and the company agreed. But weirdly, I don't know how this happened. When her doctor arrived, the autopsy had already been completed.
What?
By who? A company doctor?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, my God. So, don't say.
By this point, her family was pretty suspicious, and they tried to hire an attorney.
Good job.
But no one would take the case.
You don't say.
Frick.
Frick.
Yeah.
You tell them. Get him.
I hate you both.
All right, that is a bummer.
That's
fricky frack.
Conspiracy. Mm-hmm. There's some cover-up going on here.
I think
that
so.
I agree with. Yes.
They would later learn that the company hired their own doctors.
Of course they did.
To examine the girls all the way back in 1925. And they were told they were completely healthy. They were never told that they had tested positive for radiation, even at that time.
Completely healthy people don't lose their jaws like that.
They also don't test positive for radiation.
I mean, yes, that too. But your jaw doesn't fall apart when you're a completely healthy 24-year-old.
So the inventor of the radium dial paint, called Undark.
Such a good name.
Died.
Ooh.
He died.
Oh, okay.
Quote, toothless and fingerless.
Oh my gosh, he lost his fingers? We haven't talked about losing your fingers.
That's the name of that dragon.
Your phalanges.
Toothless?
Toothless.
Yeah, from How to Train Your Dragon. Yeah.
Stranger Dragon.
Train Your Dragon.
Two dragons, toothless and fingerless.
Well, they just pop off because they're so brittle.
They were burned off. Dork.
They're burned?
Yeah, from the radium.
Burned your fingers?
Yes.
He died at the age of 45 after getting sick from radium in his hands.
See?
Because he was mixing all the paint.
I didn't know they burned off. Well, I just thought, like, brittle bones, they just...
No, it burns your tissue.
Oh, okay.
If you handle it directly.
Next is dial painter Catherine Donahue. She began feeling ill in 1925 and was fired from the company in 1931 because she had a limp from the pain in her bones.
Gosh,
and,
dang it.
Quote, people were starting to talk, which apparently is now a fireable offense if people talk about you.
They're trying to cut their losses.
Her leg's 4 inches shorter.
Well, or the company is like seeing symptoms of radium poisoning, so they're getting rid of her before she dies. They can't link it to
exactly
them.
Exactly right.
That's probably it, but still.
I mean, yeah, it's horrible.
So parts of her jaw fell out and she couldn't eat and she lost half of her body weight.
Oh, jeez. Man.
She went on to be a part of the trials that Sarah talks about in a few minutes, but Catherine ends up wasting away to like no more than 60 pounds. She's bedridden and sadly she dies from her illnesses caused by radium ingestion.
Mm.
And honestly, there are several more noteworthy women involved. Far too many for me to mention here,
right.
But I very much encourage you, if you're interested at all, to read Kate Moore's book. And if you need to borrow it, just let me know. I'll send it to you. More and more dial painters were getting sick and claiming it was radium. And dentists were among the first to notice the problems with the dial painters, as several began presenting with dental pain, loose teeth, mouth ulcers, and failed tooth extractions. Then they would develop anemia and become easily exhausted. Their bones would fracture very easily, some of them requiring amputations.
Aww.
Their jaws crumbled away And the sores that were left behind became necrotic and infected by the condition we now call radium jaw.
Mm. Which, I didn't know it had a name. If you
Google it, it is absolutely horrifying.
I don't want to see it.
The pictures are
sad.
One girl had a total collapse of her spine. Some developed different types of cancer, and others had stillborn babies. But many of them suffered the same fate, which was death from radium exposure. This caught the attention of news outlets and the general public, who had all been told that this was the miracle substance. So like the radium waters and the radium toothpaste and all of the fun things like the makeup and the skincare that's all filled with radium. They were all about it. And so whenever they heard that like maybe there was something wrong with radium, they tuned in. So the company hired an independent study on the matter, which concluded that the painters had, in fact, died from the effects of radium exposure.
Shocked.
That didn't align with the stance of the company. If this got out, of course, they would start losing workers and business and money, which is very important to some people.
Like companies.
Like companies. So, refusing to accept the reports that radium was harmful, they hired additional studies that came to the opposite conclusion and essentially called all of the girls liars.
They lied and they died?
Yes.
Lied and died.
They lied and died. They died, but they're liars about why they died.
Mm-hmm. So, thanks to these funded conclusions, the public continued on thinking that radium was safe. It didn't help that there were, quote, medical professionals at the urging of the company, I will add, that claimed that the girls had died from syphilis. Syphilis is a sexually transmitted infection and was fairly notorious at the time, but not an illness that the girls would have openly talked about. So the strategy was that the girls would die, the company and the, quote, medical professionals would claim syphilis, knowing that it wasn't talked about, leaving their families and friends to think that it was maybe possible because the girls were too embarrassed to discuss it before their death. This tactic was used to smear the reputations of the women and was later used against them.
We have a smear campaign going on now.
Okay, so this brings us to U.S. Radium Corporation President Arthur Roeder was starting to get the idea that maybe something was going on and people were going to find out about the radium being harmful to the workers. So I'm also going to talk about Cecil Drinker.
Sir Drinker.
Mr. Drinker.
That he was popular at parties.
He's important throughout the story. So he was hired. He was an industrial hygiene expert. He was hired to investigate and prove that the company was providing a safe work environment for the girls. And obviously, we pointed out that what he found was completely opposite. Mm-hmm. And the factory was covered with radium dust. And he could see that the girls were being encouraged to use their mouth to lick the paintbrush. We've already discussed this. And he also noted that every inch of the painters glowed. Okay. He was convinced that constant exposure to radium was causing health problems, so he made this report, which we've talked about several times. So the report recommended new safety precautions to help protect anyone handling the substance. But as Boydson said, the company owner, or Mr. Roeder, felt otherwise, and insisted it was probably just contagious infection or syphilis, perhaps, that was just being passed amongst all the girls.
But I'm wondering if at that time, did they really know how syphilis was contracted? Like, did they think it was like maybe an airborne thing or like...
Maybe not, but maybe so. I also think it was just like an attempt to tarnish the reputations to make them shut up and stop talking about it.
Right.
So when the report was submitted to the New Jersey Department of Labor, it pretty much said the opposite. And it stated that every girl was in perfect condition. So that's a good setup for where we're going next. In 1925, a pathologist named Harrison Martland, who Lindsay talked about a little bit, developed a test that proved that radium had poisoned the painters by destroying their bodies from the inside. It caused tumors and honeycombed their bones, causing them to fracture spontaneously. He found that there was no way to remove the radium and that the poisoning was fatal, so he was responsible to deliver this news to the women. Mm-hmm. So, 1925, five women who were from the Orange New Jersey plant filed a lawsuit against the company. The group consisted of factory workers named Grace Fryer, Edna Hussman, Catherine Chaub, and sisters Quinta McDonald and Albina Larice. And Quinta and Albina were the sisters of Molly Maggia, who had passed away already. Grace Fryer, she was in pretty rough shape, but she was kind of the voice of the group. So the company sent a doctor named Frederick Flynn to examine her. She was having some issues and some health complaints. So when he went out there, he said she was totally fine and she was in perfect health. But it was later revealed that he was actually hired by the company to lie and say that everything was fine. And also, he was not a medical doctor, but he had a PhD. So technically he was doctor, but not a medical doctor.
He had a doctorate, but not a medical license.
Like, you would address him as Dr. Flynn. Mm-hmm. If he wanted to be called that.
Right.
He was not a medical doctor, but he practiced as one. So he was still taking blood, reading x-rays, and ordering medical treatment for the girls. It's all so fucked up.
Yeah.
So as Boydston said, all of you guys have already mentioned, it took quite a while for them to find a lawyer who would agree to take on such a large corporation. Eventually, an attorney named Raymond Berry agreed to accept the case and represent the girls. This was an extremely slow process, and probably because the company was hoping that the girls would die before the trial began.
Yeah, I mean, it's so terrible.
Yeah, no, it's terrible, but it's probably true. They tried several different delay tactics in order to make it just stretch on. They argued that because the women had left the job several years before they became sick, that the radium paint couldn't have possibly caused their ailments. The judge rejected their claims, and a hearing finally took place in 1928. At the first court appearance in January 1928, two women were bedridden, and a few of them could not even raise their arms to take an oath. Raymond Berry used a 30-year-old physicist, Elizabeth Hughes, as his expert witness. So bear with me here, because we're about to get a little science-y.
I love that he used a female witness.
Me too, because she's awesome. She was a former lab assistant in the radium section of the National Bureau of Standards. She had calibrated sealed radium sources using a gold leaf electroscope that was developed by her supervisor, Noah Dorsey. So she noticed that she could determine if a sample had radium based on how fast the gold leaf moved. The faster it moved, the more radium it had. Elizabeth said that she was warned on day one of her job how hazardous radium was, but that this information was not given to the public. So Dorsey also knew about these dangers firsthand, no pun intended, because his hands were burned after handling radium samples.
Took me like a second. Pun? It took me a second to get your pun, but I got it. Thank you.
It's not funny, but it's kind of funny.
His hands burned.
Yeah, they did. But he knew better. Elizabeth, she tested the women's breath for radium. Each woman breathed through a series of bottles containing calcium chloride to remove moisture, glass wool to remove dust, and sulfuric acid to trap any other chemicals, leaving only air and radon to be collected for analysis. As the breath accumulated, the bottles were connected to one port of the electroscope, and a suction pump was connected to another port that drew the breath through the chamber. This is as basic as I could make it.
I was going to say, it sounds very complicated to me.
She's a physicist.
Yes.
This is as much as I could break it down. They breathed through a series of bottles. It drew it through a machine, basically.
And it would show how much radium was correct. In there.
Got it. So then a voltage was applied to the chamber, and if there was enough radiation from the women's breath, it would cause the gold leaf to move. For all five of the women, the gold leaf moved at least twice as fast as the normal rate that she measured with the controls. So this was a clear indication that the women had ingested so much radium that their breath was toxic. Elizabeth, the physicist, testified that all workers and scientists should be protected from exposure to radium and explained that almost everyone who had been in direct contact with the substance now had burns on their hands.
Yeah.
The company starts realizing that maybe things aren't going well for them. So they try yet another delay tactic. They say that their witnesses can't be here because they're going to be out of town for several months.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Convenient. People were pretty quick to point out that, hey, these girls are really sick. They're dying. They're not going to make it. And this is just a ploy for you to win this case, basically. So in an effort to avoid more bad publicity, the company decided to go ahead and settle out of court. And on June 4th, 1928, the women were offered a lump sum of $10,000, or I converted it for you.
Thank you.
$158,000.
That's not much. I was expecting millions. Nope.
No. But with this first settlement, they were said offered all doctors' and lawyers' fees would be deducted from that amount. Isn't that kind?
I mean, just that's going to be like nothing left.
Exactly. So the women recognized that this was total bullshit.
Right.
And they refused this initial offer. And the company came back and offered them $10,000 plus doctor's bills and a yearly pension of $600, which is $9,500 annual.
Nothing.
Exactly. But at the time, again, we're in the 1920s.
Right.
So different time, different place. Still not great. But these people were struggling. And this was only in effect while they were alive. All medical and legal expenses incurred would also be covered by the company. So the other plant in Ottawa, Illinois, employees had begun asking for compensation for the medical and dental bills as early as 1927, but were refused by management. This continued into the mid-1930s when another lawsuit was brought to Illinois Industrial Commission. And in 1937, an attorney named Leonard Grossman represented five women, including Catherine Donahue, which Boyston spoke to. And Catherine, she was so sick during the trial that they actually had to take the trial to her home because she was too weak to travel.
Wow.
And there are a few pictures of her in her bed at her home. It's very sad. And she died shortly after. But in spring of 1938, the Illinois Industrial Commission ruled in favor of the women. And shortly after, the attorney who was representing the company tried to appeal in hopes of overturning the verdict. But he was unsuccessful. The company tried taking the case all the way to the Supreme Court, because why not? And they just continued to deny their role in the women's sicknesses. But October 23rd, 1939, the Supreme Court decided not to hear the appeal and upheld the ruling from the lower courts. So they squashed it and said, no more. We're done hearing about it. Yeah, you guys lost.
They're just delaying.
Yeah, it's been going on for many, many years. Many years. The case had been won eight times before the radium dial company was finally forced to pay. And this case was one of the first times in which a company was held responsible for the health and safety of its employees, and led to a variety of changes, including the creation of U.S. Occupational Safety and Health Administration, or OSHA.
OSHA.
Yes. It also, the right of individual workers to sue for damages from corporations due to labor abuse was also established as a result of this case. And industrial safety standards were improved over the next several decades. Radium dial painters were instructed about safety precautions and protective gear. They were also told not to lip paint, and to try to avoid ingesting / breathing the paint. Hey, by the way, we know this is bad. Don't put it in your mouth. But you used to work with it. It's fine.
Yeah, you can still touch it. Just don't put it in your mouth.
Yeah, because, also, don't breathe.
Yeah, if you could just avoid breathing it. Like, we're not going to give you stuff to help you prevent it. But if you could just not put it in your mouth, that'd be great.
Yeah. All we've learned from the past couple decades is don't put it in your mouth.
Basically. That's what she said. So they and that's where that came from. Mm-hmm. Pretty sure. The paint, though, was used in dials until the 1970s.
That is a lot longer than I thought.
I know. It's really kind of sad when we knew all this shit was going on and they were like still using it.
We knew people were dying from it.
Yeah. So some of the scientific impacts, a person named Rob Lee Evans made the first measurements from exhaled radon and radium excretion in 1933. He gathered body content measurements on 27 dial painters. The information that he collected was used in 1941 by the National Bureau of Standards to establish the tolerance level of radium, which is 0.1 microcuries. Where do you think they get that from?
Madame Curie.
Marie Curie.
Both correct. The Center for Human Radiobiology was established in 1968, and the purpose was to provide medical examinations of the living dial painters. They focused on gathering information and tissue samples from radium dial painters. By 1993, information had been collected on 2,403 cases, and this led to a book on the effects of radium on humans. The book goes into detail about the different types of radium and how certain variants are more harmful than others. There are likely thousands of dial painters who died from radium poisoning. We just won't really know.
Right, I'm sure. I'm sure a lot of them didn't report it.
Yeah. So basically, I'd also like to point out that Elizabeth Hughes is a badass, and she was the physicist who developed all this sciencey stuff, and she's a real hero. So girl power.
That's honestly amazing that there were, like, that sounds bad, that there was a female physicist in the 20s.
There was a lot of women that stepped up, and it's a real, I even said this kind of jokingly, like, girl power. And I was like, I wish I would never said that, but it's kind of true.
Wish I never said that.
In this time, because we're coming of age, we're getting a voting right, we're taking people to court, you're right. We're taking on big corporations. But yeah, it was kind of a big time for women. So go us. I mean, there's still a long ways to go, but
right,
good for them. They basically had to die for it. Seriously.
I mean, that sounds terrible, but they did. A lot of history is made from people dying.
Very true. Very true. Well, that was a very somber story, but very good and very important. And thanks for talking about it.
I think it's a great piece of history. It shows the greed, especially at that time, but it also shows the perseverance and ultimately a win for not only women, but like science and ultimately for workplace safety.
I totally agree. And I'll be honest, I like history and I didn't know much about it at all. I don't believe this is something that I heard about ever growing up.
Not before adulthood.
And it's
adulthood.
A big deal.
Yeah.
It's a big deal.
I would agree. It's not taught in our history books.
Which is unfortunate.
What was the name of the book? Give us the name of the book and all that again.
The Radium Girls.
Okay.
By Kate Moore.
Kate Moore.
By Kate Moore. Check it out. Thanks so much for tuning in this week, guys, to our episode on the Radium Girls. You can always find us at thetipsyghost@gmail.com with our socials linked from there, or send us an email at thetipsyghost@gmail.com.
Please give us a 5-star rating and a great review anywhere you listen to podcasts. We really appreciate it, and it really does help.
All right, guys. Thanks so much. We will catch you next week.
Okay, bye.
Bye.